With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Baba the Popcorn. I'm Emily.
And I'm Alessandra.
And today, we have two movies that we're going to be talking with you about that happen to have been nominated for Oscars today, because the Oscar nominations came out. All Quiet on the Western Front and Tar.
Yeah, just to give you an idea of when we watched, like, when we recorded this is right when they came out, so... yeah, two Best Picture nominees here. Actually,
sure are.
Yeah, I mean, All Quiet was nominated, right, for Best Picture?
Yeah, both of these were.
Amazing.
Yeah, I still have them up. Let me see.
Yeah, yep. The very first one on the list, because it starts with an A. which one we want to talk about first?
Let's do All Quiet, because I think I watched that one first.
Same.
All right. This is the token war film for the Oscars.
Yeah.
Because Alessandra says a war film always has to be nominated.
Yeah, they're always so serious, so they have that tone that you know, that people like.
Yeah. And obviously, All Quiet on the Western Front. A lot of us know this as one of the books we had to read in high school. I did not remember anything about this book. I honestly don't even know if I read it. But yeah.
Also, you
said you read it. You said you liked it.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did read it. Totally remember reading it. I think it was in 2009. And it was summer. It was a summer read. And I remember some things about it. I remember learning what a louse was, which is the singular lice.
Okay.
I do remember the friends being kind of picked off one by one. And I do remember the main character dying right before the end of the war. I remember that pretty clearly. And then, of course, watching this kind of reminded me of the various things in the book, like especially that scene where he's in the hole with a guy and he stabs him and the guy will not stop gurgling. And in the book, he's like kind of driven mad as well. So I remember that scene. But, you know, the other stuff was just a bunch of war stuff and I didn't really know what was going on so much in the, you know, the ninth grade. So... I wasn't like picturing it as much, I think, as seeing it on the screen.
Yeah, I think a lot of those books they made us read like back in high school. Some of them were hard to like imagine while you're reading it, or at least I just wasn't actively trying because I can't. I have to be imagining things while I'm reading, and if I'm not doing that, I'm not paying attention, and I'm just reading the words, but not actually, like, taking them in. So I feel like maybe that's kind of what happened with this book, because, I don't know, the part with the crater definitely seemed familiar, and even the part with the guy in the fork, like, that... maybe, but that was towards the very end, and I'm sure I didn't read this book. I'm sure
yeah,
like all the way through. I'm sure I maybe got like halfway through it, maybe.
But yeah, you know, we've watched a lot of World War One adaptations, and you know, 1917 being one of them, but this is definitely a group of people, not just like, you know, in 1917, it's like within 24 hours. This one's within like 2 years following the end of the war. And also it's from the German perspective, which I don't remember if the book is like that, but it's definitely a wonderful way to see this group of kids, like, and their, like, powerlessness in the army, and the like, real camaraderie that they felt just in the hopelessness of their situation. And I thought that the direction and the writing, like, the screenplay was nominated for adapted screenplay. It is really good and really well done. Pretty much everything about this movie is, like, beautiful and horrible at the same time, you know.
Exactly. I think I was in a good mood to watch this movie, you know, for how devastating it is. But you know, there are some lighter parts, as you said, you know, the group of soldiers that kind of all become friends and kind of stick together. They really have great chemistry, and you can tell they all really love each other, and they're just trying to survive this war together. And yeah, I thought this movie was really good. Like, I'm really not into war films, mm-hmm. but I actually liked this one. It was, like, the pacing of it was really good. I liked all the viewpoints we got. You know, mm-hmm. we got the horrible, like, trench warfare from the soldier's perspective, and then we got, like, the hoity-toity, like, you know, upper sergeants and colonels and, you know, generals and stuff, like, doing all the back-end negotiations trying to stop this war because, mm-hmm. you know, tons of people are dying. And you're just seeing all these crazy stark differences about, you know, the different aspects of this war, and all the atrocities about it, and kind of everything coming full circle. Like, in the very beginning of the movie, we see a ton of soldiers die. We see their uniforms get taken and get washed and fixed and then given out to new recruits to basically die. Mm-hmm. Like, it was very powerful and very sad, but very beautiful. It was really good. And then seeing the guy die at the end, I was like, what? I was so mad. I was like, no, he was right there. Just because that stupid guy wanted one last fight. And I was like, you ass. Oh, God. I was so mad.
It was like a real, I mean, that was a thing that actually happened. I read that it was like 4,000 people died on the last day of the war.
The last 15 minutes of the war.
Yeah, it was like the last 6 hours. Jesus. Like, absolute, completely nonsensical death, needless death. And the whole war was a complete farce as well. I mean, it was just, it was so horrendous and so horrible, and so many people lost their lives that it just was like one of those things that, it of course, it changed the course of the way that the world worked after this. And you can see it just very clearly with those guys. And I love that comment that you said, that it just comes full circle. And I did know that Paul was killed at the end. So I think it would have been more shocking to me, you know, obviously not knowing that, because it's very sad. And the way he dies is just, it's so horrible. And the way all of his friends die. And, you know, it really just felt, it was good. It was an amazing movie. I'm really glad that it was made. Glad it's gotten nominated for so many Oscars. And it was on Netflix, so we could watch it very easily.
Yeah, this is accessible to a lot of people to watch. I highly suggest you watch it. It was very good. Very good. I'm glad it also got nominated for, we kind of did like a quick little Oscar nominations first reactions from me, because I hadn't looked at them all day.
Yeah.
If you notice that episode got released, definitely go check it out. But I was really glad to see this. I don't normally notice sound unless the music or the sounds are like very noticeable. Mm-hmm. And the sounds were very noticeable in this, like with the crazy, like, I don't even know what instrument this was, but it was like like that,
mm-hmm.
in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those were crazy. And then they had some other sounds too. Like, there'd be, they're not ticking, but I think there was something else. There were some other sounds that would kind of come out of nowhere. And I'm like, oh, it was like a little unsettling and like a little like interesting. Mm-hmm. I really liked the music for this movie. It was great.
Yeah. And, you know, not to mention the sound and the editing with it, is just really, really remarkable. Really, like, top of their game people, that these Germans who made this movie. It really, really is quite great. And, you know,
they really put everything into this.
Yeah, and I also like to see the makeup and hairstyling get nominated as well. You know, that is a really big part of World War One, is just the depravity of these people, and like the gauntness of the soldiers and their everything, you know, even down to like what their teeth looked like, and you know, all the mud on their faces and all that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I loved the main actor, the guy that played Paul. He just would get all this gunk on his face, and I'm just like, ugh, but just, it was so, such a trooper.
And he always had like a really kind of, like, you could see when it flash forwarded, like a year and a half, that his face got so much gaunter, and like, you could see the lines running down his face, and the, you know.
Yes, thin. He got so skinny.
Yeah, apparently the actor also got super skinny. Like, he, it says in one of the trivias here that he was, let's see. Felix Kammerer, the lead, fit his body to the role, had to put on a 10 kg vest and run 10 kilometers with it every day for months.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
That's insane.
Yeah. The set, it's like, it says one of the trenches locations took up a space that was a kilometer long and 600 meters wide. Oh my God. That's crazy. Wow. Yeah. Oh
goodness.
All that no man's land that they were running across and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, we have seen a lot of World War One adaptations, or at least allusions, in, you know, again, our beautiful, wonderful Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. He's in the war, so we get to see some of this.
Yeah, we sure do.
Of course, it's like the TV budget version, but same with Down Abbey, again, the TV budget version. But you know, I think 1917 was kind of the closest thing to the realism that this movie felt like. But of course, that was a completely different story and completely different shot. But it did make me think of that. And Danny and I were watching this movie together, and I was like, Danny, you got to see 1917. Because if you like this movie, that movie was like, oh, I think about that sometimes.
1917 was real. If I had to list on two fingers my two favorite war movies, it's probably 1917 and maybe this movie. I don't know. There might be another war movie that I like better, but we'll see.
That's very true. It says
I definitely don't have a top five. I don't have a top five.
There was an All Quiet on the Western Front that won the 1930 version, right? Best Picture Oscar.
I want to watch that.
Yeah. And there was also another one in 1979, but it also wasn't nominated or anything. And it is also said to be the most expensive German film in the history of Netflix. Oh. So I guess Netflix.
Of Netflix? Really?
I guess so. I mean, that makes sense to me. What are they making? That was a TV show.
Sense8 was their most expensive.
Oh, I bet it was. I bet it was. That was a really expensive TV show. So if this movie wins. So
the 1930s one was also a German film?
No, it wasn't. No. But it did win Best Picture in 1930. So, I mean, if this one wins, I mean, it's possible. I'm not saying it's not. It's nominated for Best Picture. So,
91 Metascore. Damn, we gotta watch this.
Okay, all right. Sorry, didn't make you watch it.
We could rent it on Amazon. Look at that.
We'll get back to you about that one.
This movie's old. It should be free.
It's so true.
Get out of here.
I wish.
God, anything 1950s and older should just be free.
Well, actually, I think a lot of stuff I think 1927, if I'm not mistaken, is in the public domain this year. So every year gets put into the public domain, and I'm not really sure because some things are still being owned that are that old, but I'm pretty sure that even if it gets to be that old, it just becomes in the public domain at some point. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, just, you know, shout out to all these German actors. They were cute. And it was great to see Daniel Brühl in here, who had a really, you know, integral role.
Yeah. It's like, hey, this guy.
His emotion was really good for the, like, kind of stoicism that he was trying to, you know, enact, like you were saying, with the hoity-toityness of everything. And but he had lost his own son in the war, so there was that element to it.
It was really nice good to see him on kind of a good side. He was trying to stop this war, and, you know, so he usually he kind of plays like a bad guy or like a creep, right? That guy.
Yeah, he's always a mean German dude, or he's, you know, he was also in, you know, like Captain America: Civil War, and, you know,
Captain. Oh yeah, the guy who was trying to take over Bucky.
Yeah, yeah, he's just always some mean, like, scary German dude.
So, yeah,
he wasn't this time.
No, he was a. He was a nice German dude. He's doing his best. Was there any other cool trivia?
Not really. I mean, you know, just war stuff.
Okay. Let's see. Any taglines? No, don't see any taglines. All right.
You know what I loved? I loved the character of Cat, because he was always...
Yeah!
I think he's my favorite, and he was always, like, just saying these really poetic things. And some of his lines were just, like, so well done. You know, just kind of talking about, like, the fragility of life and stuff like that. And, like, continuing on and just keep going. And, like, it was really good. He really, like, to me, like, really tied this movie up. Like, and when he died so stupidly, it was just, like...
It was heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was so heartbreaking. And I do also remember that in the book as well, actually. I think I remember that. Yeah, I just really liked him.
And he was the one who was kind of helping Felix at first in the... Or helping Paul in the trenches as well. Like, he was like, you know, keep your head down and giving him all the tips and tricks, which, again, kind of going full circle, Paul was kind of doing the same thing, like looking out for that young recruit who had kind of just come out when the war was ending, trying to help him kind of survive right at the very ends of the war. But yeah, I really liked Kat a lot. And the fact that he couldn't read and he wanted to read his letters from his wife was so cute.
Yeah, great heart in this movie.
Yeah,
all right, plot keywords are... We got... You got them?
I'll get them when we get them.
You always get them.
I know, but it sounded like you were going to say them, so I was pausing. Oh. Okay. World War I, year 1918, trench warfare, flamethrower. Those fucking flamethrowers, dude, were
scary.
Crazy. And then the tanks, oh my god.
Yeah, that tank scene was crazy.
When that tank just ran over someone, I was like, my goodness. And then No Man's Land. Those are the plot keywords.
Yeah, I actually thought this movie was going to be more graphic body horror wise, and it wasn't. I mean, some of the worst things were, like, that guy hanging from the tree, the guy getting crushed by a tank, but most of it was, like, you know, getting shot and kind of bloated bodies.
That got me Yeah, it wasn't that bad, gore wise. But the part that kind of got me, which was Paul, I think, was walking up on. I think it was after the first battle, and like a lot of the soldiers died, especially his friend with the glasses, Albert, I think. He was, and I think the guy with the glasses had like lost a leg, and his like bone was sticking out, and that's.
Oh yeah.
That's when I kind of was like a little bit. I was like, oh, don't look. And I had to like kind of close my eyes a little bit. I don't like seeing bones.
Yeah.
At that point, it gets too real.
I don't want to see your insides on the outside. You know what I mean?
I don't want to see your insides on the outside, please.
Okay, this movie got a 76 Metascore, which honestly is kind of low. I really do think it deserves higher than that. It's got 30 like positive reviews, 5 mixed reviews, and 0 negatives. There's only 2 100s on here, and the lowest are 350s. So it's not like it's like that low.
Considering how many 100s fucking, what movie got too many 100s? I don't know. I can't. Babylon? I don't know.
Babylon. Yes, that was the one.
What's the one? We've got too many 100s. It really Come on. Did. Give a couple to All Quiet on the Western Front. Come on. All right, let's go down here. So the lowest we've got. Really, there's more 50s than 100s? Shut up. All right.
Shut up.
Okay, which one? No. I guess I'll do the Wall Street Journal. Fully understanding the war, who does, may not be necessary in appreciating the disturbing, moving, and sometimes too beautiful production, but that production certainly puts a Teutonic tweak on history, sometimes to outrageous effect.
Okay.
That's kind of what the Roger Ebert one said, too. It was, it's like, filmmakers have arguably lost the plot, turning war as hell into can you top this competition?
Okay.
Hmm.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. I don't agree with that.
I'm going to read the film Stage 67. Coupling a minimalist, albeit loud and thumping score by Volker Bertelmann and a cold, unfeeling color scheme by cinematographer James Friend gives a menacing, unwaveringly serious savagery to director Edward Berger's aesthetic. Danger and imminent violence are palpable even when there is hardly any action on screen.
Hardly any action?
Yeah, everybody's saying there's like a lot of like duller moments in this movie. Like not enough warfare, I guess. And like,
that's also what war is. It's a lot of sitting and waiting.
That is so true, Emily. You know.
I've seen other war films. Other war films are like exactly like this.
Well, the book is like that. Why are
they shitting on this one?
I know. I'm like the
war is like that.
Yeah, you just wait to die. Like
you wait to die. You wait to fight, and you wait to die.
In the book, they just get moved from one place to the other. Like the whole book. Like there's not really as much trench warfare in it. I don't think it's kind of just like talking about the girls that the one guy runs off with and like wishing that they could touch a woman ever again, you know, that kind of stuff. And
yeah,
it really just makes more sense because they are just sitting around and being friends and stealing gooses and stuff.
And especially like at the very end, the like little information tidbits that come up at the end, like they spent the entire war like fighting over like this small area of land.
Mm-hmm.
Like they just kept going back and forth on who had who had
the territory.
What's it called? Yeah, like who had the territory, and they just went back and forth the entire time. Like it was a complete waste of time, and it's a lot of sitting and waiting to die.
The scene where they go to that manufacturing place and they see the all the guys who died of the gas just in that one room, and it's like they took off their gas masks too soon and they all died. It was just horrendous. Yeah. It was so horrific.
Yeah. And it was especially like heartbreaking at first because, you know, these boys are, you know, trying to join this war. Paul signs his, like, forges his parents' signature when he didn't even get permission to go because he just wanted to go to probably be a hero and be with his friends. Like, oh, his friends are going, so I want to go. Like, I want to be a hero and finish this war. And just seeing how naive everyone was to their own detriment. And it's just...
Yeah.
It's... I'm disappointed. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed in the powers that be that let these people fight and die.
Yeah, the IGN kind of hits that on the head. It says, it's a 90. All Quiet on the Western Front is just as bleak as you might imagine, with an unflinching examination of the horrors of war. It's a brutal, exhausting, and raw reminder of the evil humanity is capable of inflicting upon each other, and it couldn't be more timely. It's the ultimate anti-war war film. That's what film.com said. It's like so incredibly like anti-war because it's futility.
Yeah.
And that's how you feel completely. At the end. You're just like, this is so fucked up. Everything's so fucked up. You're like, great.
This was all for nothing. And it's, wow.
And the Observer 100 says, while not as showy as Sam Mendes' sweeping single-shot takes in 1917, this is remarkable, if harrowing, filmmaking. Moments of striking beauty, sunlight carved into exultant rays by skeletal winter trees, are almost as shocking and disquieting as the scenes of suffering.
Yeah.
It's an amazing That's review nice. There, Observer.
Yeah.
Okay, is that That's all a nice quiet?
Description there. Yeah, I think so. Want to take a quick break before we move on to Tar?
Yes.
All right.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Okay, we are back with Tar. Oh my God.
Yes.
By Todd Field. Starring Kate Blanchett. Kate Blanchett. I have not seen anything this guy has done before.
Yeah, I'm looking at his page to see because this name doesn't sound familiar to me.
I watched one episode of that Carnival series. Once. That's all I got.
Oh.
I think it was okay. On HBO.
Yeah. Hmm. Haven't seen anything. By this person. Was this based off of someone in particular, or is this just original?
I think it's not specific.
Okay.
As far as I know, it's not like Glass Onion specific, you know?
Uh-huh.
But I think she's a amalgamation. Tar is
original screenplay.
Yeah, it's original screenplay. So it's definitely not like directly based on someone. What I'm saying is just like influenced by maybe somebody's life or something. It seemed pretty, you know, singularly original to me. But of course, she is kind of an amalgamation of people, problematic people in power in a way.
For sure, for sure. This, so I don't think I saw any trailers about this movie. I just was kind of hearing about it, hearing that, you know, Cate Blanchett did like an amazing job in this movie. It's probably like one of her best roles I've been hearing. So I don't, and I knew it was like about conducting in some way. I think that was about as far, that was as far as my knowledge went. But yeah, I thought this movie was very enjoyable. Lydia Tarr, the character Cate Blanchett plays, is quite a piece of work.
Yeah. It starts off the movie
really about
like talking about her, all of her achievements as a conductor and musical artist.
Right. It's really about, I mean, she's already risen, but it's basically about like the rise and fall of this person. Like, and
yeah, but it's really not as, it's not like as cut as dry as that as well. Like, I feel like it's just such a gray area movie. Like, there's not, you know, the things that you think are going to happen in this movie don't happen. You know, it's like the situations are so insular. Yeah,
it's all very vague. Yeah. It's not very clear about, like I watched this with my roommate and they had to pull up a summary of this movie because there were some parts where we were like, why did this happen? What did this mean? Like, this movie really did not baby step you at all. And you, you really had to, you really had to fight to hang on. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think, you know,
like you're holding on tight in this windstorm. You're holding on to that palm tree.
Gosh, yeah, so true. Yeah, and I, you know, its ambiguity in that way is kind of like good, because, you know, I don't really like it when movies are spoon feeding you what to think. So to me, this was kind of a nice, I like it when they're just like things that people are doing. But I also liked the surrealist aspects of this movie. I think that's kind of like the semi-horror surrealism that folded out of Tarr's like eventual mental drain, you know, like,
yeah, kind of when she was like hearing things in her apartment and she was thinking that someone was like, for a while I thought that someone was breaking in and like keeping her awake, but eventually it kind of just seemed like it was maybe her guilt or maybe just, yeah, you know, something was like she was the one keeping herself up.
Yeah, the guilt of like being the reason why that girl killed herself, and seeing her everywhere, and then kind of like seeing representations of death, like that black dog thing that she saw in that like decrepit building that she went down into. You know, it was like a strange uncomfortableness, and even her daughter was just such an uncomfortable child to like be around in a movie. Like, she was just like so creepy. Like, you know,
Petra?
Yeah, Petra. Like, she would like sing, but she didn't really act like a child, and like she like found her like hiding behind the windows humming something at one point. And you know, it's just kind of got all this like stuff in possibly Tarr's mind to make the viewer possibly get into the mental state of somebody like this. Somebody who's a genius and a tortured artist and an abuser of others and their talents and their like youth and beauty as well. And so,
yeah, because they basically had to do, because we kind of learn So basically, the accusations that arise are that she took advantage of some of her proteges that were in her program, and we're kind of off. And then we kind of hear about, like, we're given things in very, like, little tidbits here and there throughout the movie. Like, we hear that she would give people favors, or she'd make promises to people that she favored, if they would, like, do stuff for her. Mm-hmm. And we kind of find out later that she sort of did a similar thing, like, with her wife that she ends up marrying. Like, they,
yeah,
like, their relationship was kind of part of mutual, like, advantage, it seems. Or, you know, maybe more like one-sided advantage from basically the notoriety that Lydia got from marrying her wife, Sharon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, like, Sharon being the kind of character that was like, you know, you can do whatever you want. You just have to tell me about it. And, like, Tar's, like, ability to flirt with other girls and, like, Lydia just kind of being like, yeah, like, I'm your sounding board. You're the one. You trust me no matter what. And when you're not talking to me, it means that something is wrong. You know?
Yeah.
It's an interesting, like, relationship that they have. But Tar is also, like, in a position of power over her wife, even. So.
Right.
It's kind of, like, an interesting. There's a lot of dynamics going on. And especially with her assistant, Francesca, who's played by Noémie Merlant, who you remember from Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
I sure do. We were actually, like, the second I didn't really recognize her at first. Like, I was, like, she looked a little familiar, but I was like, nothing was, and then Casey immediately said, like, she looks familiar, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I kept looking at her, and I was like, she does look familiar, and then I was like, Casey, did you figure it out? And they're like, no, and I'm like, well, I don't know either. You need to tell me who it is. And then I think, like, shortly after that, I was like, why do I keep thinking of A Portrait of a Lady on Fire? And Casey was like, yes, that's where she's from.
Yeah.
So I figured that out. That was fun.
And she also was clearly, like, in love with Lydia as well.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, but she was also, like, recording her and stuff. And I guess kind of involved with possibly the other people who were involved with Lydia or something like that. It was so vague. So, like, you didn't know.
So the movie starts with this camera being pointed at her, and it's like a live video message. Like, it wasn't like an Instagram live or like a TikTok live. Like, there weren't tons of people looking. It was just like, someone had a live video going, and then someone was texting at the same time.
Yeah.
And they kept saying, like, how's she doing? And then you didn't really know who it was, because they never showed you who it was, but you think it was, what was her name? Francesca. But then later when she took, what was the name of the celloist that came in?
Olga.
Yeah, when she took Olga to, like, New York for her book reading, it seemed like Olga was the one, or just someone else in the audience was doing it. Like, I don't know, someone that seemed like someone was following her or something. But no, yeah. On the plane, it had to be someone who was with her.
No, I think it was, like, Francesca. And I think, like,
okay,
I think it was a group of people who had eventually come forward to tell the world how they felt, like, what Lydia had done to them. And it was a group of women, and they were all, like, banding against Lydia. But it also, you know, kind of felt like it could have all possibly been in Lydia's head. So, you know, it's like, not quite clear.
I never saw it that way. Yeah, I guess it was, again, it was, because, yeah, you were seeing it as this, like, surreal, like, could be, like, the parts where it was, like, all dark and there were, like, those white faces, mm-hmm, kind of showing, mm-hmm, through, like, dancing, like, yes, that felt, part, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when she, and also when she was kind of dreaming, like there was the part where like the bed was hovering over the river in wherever she was at, probably one of the places that she visited, to study the sounds of the music of those people. And so like, yeah, but I guess I didn't really pay attention to that. I just thought it was like a dream or, but yeah, but you think the part with the dog like was never real? Like Olga didn't even go in there?
I don't even know. Like, I don't, it's not very clear.
It's not clear.
And you're constantly thinking about this character and wondering if you should feel bad for her or not, or if you're sympathetic to her. And Cate Blanchett does a really good job of that. And I think that the ambiguity of it makes you, you know, think about the ways that we talk about and analyze people today who, you know, probably are bad people and you should not support them. So it's kind of like the, it's like the cancel culture response of ambiguity in a movie. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And those are like the themes of Lydia as a person. And it's just not that clear either. It's not like cut and dry. And I think that's what makes it a better screenplay than if it was like a more straightforward story. Because like that ending was really weird. And it just ends. Like the movie just ends.
Yeah. So, yes. So when Casey was looking up the summary of the movie, because, you know, it just after she attacks that guy at the live concert, it just kind of goes dark, and then she's in another country. And you see her kind of going through a whole new process of something, and they were like, okay, and then she's doing a bunch of people in costumes are like, what's happening? And then we read in the summary that she started doing music for a video game, and there was like a live audience like event that like fans of the video game could come and cosplay and come view the score. So it's interesting.
Yeah. And then it was like, oh, I guess this is her falling from grace, that she's only doing things in other countries where no one really cares what she's done.
I mean, she was already in other countries doing stuff at I guess because it was happening there. Because that's where the school was that she was teaching as well, right? Or would she travel to Berlin to do the concert stuff, and then she was going to... Wasn't she going to, like, Juilliard and teaching?
Yeah, so I think that was only just, like, a guest speaker or guest teaching. So she would, like, live in Berlin and then would, like, go teach a little bit at Juilliard whenever she felt like it and whenever she was in New York or something.
But she lived and, like, worked in Berlin.
Yeah.
With the Berlin orchestra. Okay. Yeah, this movie was good. I'll give it that. Will I watch it again? Probably not. Was it interesting to kind of like watch the conducting process and like the concert, you know, rehearsal process? Yeah, I found those scenes very interesting. But yeah. It was very smart, and it kind of, like, went over my head a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the point, too. Like, I feel like there was so much, especially the beginning of the movie, a ton of discussions between intellectuals and using jargon of conducting nature.
Not many people.
That not many people would really care to know. I mean, it's really just it's just kind of all ridiculous. And like, obviously there's people who have conversations like that in this world. For sure. But like, it just, it doesn't make any sense to the average person, right? Like if you don't know anything about conducting, it's just words. And so a lot of it is kind of watching Cate Blanchett just kind of interacting and like watching her as a person just kind of moving in a space, moving as a conductor, you know, what she's wearing, how she's how she has her hair, like all this stuff. So because everything else is so much more difficult to understand, you're really focusing on her and her performance.
Yeah, and I really think Cate was a great actor to put in this spot, because again, she was so mesmerizing. Like, yes, I didn't have a clue of what they were talking about a majority of the time, but like yeah. It was still so fun to watch her, like just be this character and those you know, confusing, snooty intellectual conversations, like really helped kind of define her character. That scene where she was kind of picking on that student at Juilliard, is that was all one long take, wasn't it? I don't think I saw any cuts.
Yeah, I guess it was.
I think it was one long continuous shot.
Oh my god!
From the top, and she just did that whole monologue, like that whole thing, in like one take.
I know, it's unbelievable. She's an amazing actress. She could win best actress for this for sure.
Yeah.
There's this awesome Martin Scorsese quote here in the trivia that I think is kind of great, because it's got a lot to say about this movie, and I think he does a good job analyzing it here. Obviously, it's Martin Scorsese. So he says, for so long now, so many of us see films that are pretty much let us know where they're going. I mean, they take us by the hand, and even if it's disturbing at times, sort of comfort us along the way that it will be all okay in the end. Now, this is insidious, as one can get lulled into this and ultimately get used to it, leading those of us who've experienced cinema in the past as much more than that to become despairing of the future of art form, especially for younger generations. But that's on dark days. The clouds lifted when I experienced Todd's film, Tar. What you've done, Todd, is that the very fabric of the movie that you've created doesn't allow this. All the aspects of cinema and the film that you've used attest to this. The shift in locations, for example, the shift in locations alone do what cinema does best, which is reduce space and time to what they are, which is nothing. You make it so that we exist in her head. We experience only through her perception. The world is her. Time, chronologically, and space become the music that she lives by. And we don't know where the film's going. We just follow the character on her strange, upsetting road to her even stranger final destination. Now, what you've done, Todd, is a real high wire act, as all of this is conveyed through masterful mise-en-scene, as controlled, precise, dangerous, precipitous angles and edges geometrically kind of chiseled into a wonderful 2-3-5 aspect ratio of frame compositions. The limits of the frame itself and the provocation of measured long takes, all reflecting the brutal architecture of her soul, Tar's soul.
Wow.
I'm not going to say that we just said a lot of what Martin Scorsese said, but you just were talking about the long takes and the, you know, like.
Well, yeah. And I really liked in that. I love that scene a lot. Like, it just, I thought it was so, like, I could not take my eyes off of Cate. She was just amazing.
Yeah.
And I really liked this one line that her character was talking about, you know, when you're conducting, you are controlling time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very cool. Like, it made me think in a way that I wouldn't have thought about conducting. Like, when you think of conducting, you think of just setting the pace, keeping all of the musicians on tempo, but you're like, you're controlling the time. And I thought that was really cool. I really liked it.
Yeah, and like, you could see that as a version of this movie where she's in control and then she's not anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, she does, like her brother says, when she walks into her old house, like, he's like, you know, you've really left a lot of loose ends. Not that it's any of my business. And you're watching it and you're like, yeah, she really did. Like, there was no hiding her just complete like use of people. It was just, to her, it was not a problem, you know? And like, why would she think that it would be a problem? Like, she never really wanted to hide anything until it was too late.
Yeah, it wasn't until, like, Francesca kept getting those texts from and emails from Krista, the student who kills herself. Like, she kind of starts trying to cover things up, like, delete the emails of her, like, basically saying, don't bring this person into your program. Like, she's not good. And you're just, and yeah, and then the way, again, the ambiguity is so interesting. Because in the beginning, you're like, oh, this person's, like, blackmailing her or, you know, trying to, like, take advantage of Tar. But then it kind of flips and you're like, oh, who's the bad guy here? It was very trippy. It's way trippy.
Sure is. Yeah.
Super trippy. Again, holding on to that palm tree. You're flying sideways. That's the wind. You are up. Your feet are up. Your feet are off the ground. And you are hanging for dear life on this damn palm tree.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that because, like I said, it's not really like a lot of other movies, and it doesn't really hold your hand. It's kind of just, it's a really interesting movie, and I'm glad that it was made because this person, you know, Todd Field really made what he saw. Like, he produced something that was wholly original, and, you know, I love that. We don't see a lot of that, so,
Yeah, another great line is when Petra's getting bullied and Lydia goes to school to drop her off and walks up to the child who's bullying Petra and goes, "Hi, I'm Petra's father."
Yeah.
I loved that line. I loved it so much.
Yeah, she's like, you know, and then she was and so she threatens
the child, basically.
Yeah, she threatened the child. She's like, I will hurt you.
I will get you.
I will get you. That's what she says. I will get you. And if you try to tell anyone about this, they're not going to believe you because I'm an adult and you're a child. Oh, she says these things like out in the middle, like probably where people can see her. She says hi to people. Like her like ability to just not think that her like actions are fucked up in some way. Like, you can't just go up to a kid and threaten them. Like, the fact that she did that is like, you what? Yeah, it's like you're automatically like, this person is really skirting the line between, you know, like, what kind of person would do that? What kind of person would go threaten a kid? And I guess it's this kind of person.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that she couldn't have been all right in the head. I mean, there was something. There was something there. Something going on.
Okay.
Oh, man. All right. Any other interesting trivia, or should I do these plot keywords?
No, I looked through some, but it's all good.
All right, so we've got orchestra, lesbian character, classical music, character name as title, and LGBT.
Okay. This movie got a 92 Metascore. Whoa. A 56 positive, 3 mixed, and 0 negatives. And I am pretty sure that this is our highest rated movie that we've reviewed this year. I do not think
holy shit
that anything has even come close to 92% this year.
Wow. I thought there'd be way more 100s. It was only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Well, I guess because there's not a lot of lows. What's the lowest?
Wait. Let me see. That's true. I was looking at the wrong page. But 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Okay, no, there's a lot. There's a lot.
Oh, my God. Never mind.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. There's so many. Wait.
What have you done? Jesus, Emily.
Okay, well, okay, so I was still on, I think I was still on, like, the snapshot of the Metacritic on IMDb. I wasn't, like, fully on Metacritic's, like, website yet. So I was only seeing some of the 100s. So, oh my God, how many are on here? Like fucking 20? Jesus. Hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26?
Oh my God.
26?
That is a record, dude. That is an actual fucking record. Like, I don't think we've ever seen.
Oh my God. What? That's amazing.
I know. Great.
It's
Great job,
absolutely
Tar.
amazing. Damn. All right. Okay, let's see. Which one of these 50s do I want to read? Because this is the lowest we got. I'll do the Wall Street Journal. Like its subject, the film is severe, dry, and painfully serious, but in the closing seconds, Mr. Field does at last deliver some relief with a visual joke that deals in a kind of cosmic comeuppance. It's by far the best part of the movie, but it arrives too late to make much of a difference. Up to that point, Tar is like listening to a slow, ominous roll on the timpani or for 2.5 hours. I don't agree.
Yeah, that's I think that's a bit that's really boiling it down to what it's not in a lot of ways, you know? Trying to find meaning in this movie is, you know.
I don't think that's what it that's there's no meaning. It's just people are assholes, and sometimes they get what's deserved.
Okay, I'm gonna read this Vulture 80. It says, "We know where Tar is headed pretty much from its opening scenes, but that doesn't mean that the film shouldn't still surprise and shock us. Luckily, this is where Blanchett comes in, turning the movie from a moderately interesting to a topical one into something quite beautiful. She brings the energy and sensation that much of the rest of the film lacks." I can get behind that.
Very true. Very true.
Pace
Wait,
says it's
darling.
tyrannical, ruthless, and selfish, and Tar isn't so shallow as to suggest simple solutions outside the obvious. That's very true. There's just so many good ones. It's like, oh, you know, which green are you gonna pick? Pick one of the 100s, Emily.
Oh, don't put this on me.
Okay,
Let me see.
I'm gonna look through one of these 26 100 and see which one I like the best.
Help me. I'm also gonna recount because I feel like I counted wrong.
No one but Blanchett could have delivered the imperious hauteur necessary for portraying a great musician heading for a crack up or creative epiphany. No one but Blanchett has the right way of wearing a two-piece black suit with an open-necked white shirt, the way of shaking her hair loose at moments of abandon, the way of letting her face become a Tutankhamun mask of contempt.
Very nice. Very nice. And I was correct. 26.
Oh,
26
wow. I
100s.
can't believe you counted twice. That's hilarious.
This one's kind of interesting. I don't know if we've read from NME before.
Yeah, they're a British company.
Let's see. We've got Lydia Tár isn't a real person, but this riveting film about the corrupting effects of power and privilege will make you think she is. That's partly because writer-director Todd Field has created a terrifyingly beautiful, believable character and the world that she presides over. I like that.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why I didn't love Glass Onion and the kind of like people in that, because they just felt so, in a lot of ways, very one-dimensional. And, you know, I'm not saying that that's not exactly what they're supposed to be, because they were. But obviously, each one of them could have a movie just like this if they were written that way.
I like this one too, from Vox. To watch Tar properly requires mental recursion. The surface of each scene is perfectly legible, but the full import of what you're watching is elusive till the end of the scene. or even the sequence. The end of the film recasts everything that's come before it. It's like Kierkegaard's old saw embodied. Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards.
And there were like a lot of credits in the very beginning of the movie as well.
Yeah, that was so interesting. I was like, did the movie glitch? Like I thought it was playing the end. I was like, what is happening?
Exactly. And it also starts off like, that's an amazing review. Thank you for reading that, Emily. It also starts off like so encompassing of like kind of reading her obituary of sorts, right? It's like this is everything she's ever accomplished and one thing that she still hasn't. And it is almost like an obituary. So I bet you could watch this whole movie backwards and it would be a totally different, you could watch it Memento style.
Yeah. Ooh, that'd be interesting.
And it would still make no sense.
Yeah, it wouldn't. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, man. We're done?
Yeah.
Are we done? All right. No ambiguity here, people. We're done. That was All Quiet on the Western Front and Tar, two movies nominated for Best Picture. Oh my goodness. We've got so many more movies to watch. But if you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher, and on IMDb. And we are also on Amazon Music, Spotify, and Acast. If you want to email us and say hello, please do that at allbythepopcornpodcast@gmail.com. Please follow our social media. We have Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube. Just search All By The Popcorn or All By The Popcorn Podcast. And we also have merch, so please check that out. But thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you in the next one. Goodbye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.